Welcome to Podcasts on Demand, a continuing medical education activity. This activity includes the most recent and current clinical data presented by leading experts. If you are seeking continuing education credit, please review the disclosures and the requirements for a successful completion of the activity prior to listening to the podcast. A link is found in the podcast description that can direct you to this information.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this clinical clip entitled Key COPD Updates from ATS 2025. My name is Dr. Sonali Bose. I'm an associate professor of medicine and pediatrics at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, and also an adjunct professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins University. In this clip, I'm going to highlight the key data that was presented at the conference in San Francisco, California at ATS 2025. I'm very excited to present this video to you and reveal some of the most relevant updates that we've seen at this conference, ranging from improved diagnostic criteria to understanding better phenotypes, as well as implementation of therapies. And this can really impact our clinical practice going into this year. It's been a very quick evolution in the science, and I hope that this video and other presentations that you'll be able to see are helpful to continue our journey in trying to optimize our approach towards COPD. So I'd like to first start off by talking about some of the data that looked at diagnostic criteria. And traditionally, as you know, our approaches towards diagnosis of COPD has really relied on spirometry, in particular, a FEV1 upper FVC ratio less than 0.7. And our greater understanding of this over the last couple decades has been that we are missing a significant number of patients if we rely clearly on this very one objective data or criteria. And so some of the new data that was presented at the conference discussed whether we should be using new schema that includes looking at major and minor criteria, including symptoms such as dyspnea and quality of life, as well as chronic bronchitis as a minor symptom, CT findings as well, including emphysema and bronchial wall thickening as a minor criteria, and spirometry if it's available. And what the authors did in one particular presentation is that they analyzed COPD gene and CanCold cohorts, which encompassed over 10,000 patients, and looked at whether these diagnostic criteria of having a major criteria such as airflow obstruction, as well as an addition of one or more minor criterion, might better help us to identify high-risk patients with COPD. What they first did was they looked at how this new diagnostic schema may impact our understanding of the risk of various clinical outcomes, including mortality from COPD, exacerbations, and annualized lung function decline. And so what we see in the reclassified groups actually is that those that were missed by spirometry alone but were newly identified by the new classification system demonstrated a two-fold increase in all-cause mortality, more than a threefold increase in respiratory-specific mortality, a doubling in the exacerbation rate, and a faster annual decline in FEV1. And so all of these outcomes were adjusted in multivariate models, but do demonstrate the fact that depending on how you identify your risk at-risk population, you might actually be missing a subgroup that does have a higher risk for morbidity and mortality in COPD. And so what was interesting was to see how having no COPD versus major diagnostic criteria for COPD versus only having minor diagnostic criteria can really impact the risk of having these outcomes. And it was interesting to see how having a new diagnostic schema, which defines COPD, falls within this landscape. And really, ultimately, what we're trying to do is identify patients who may actually have COPD-related outcomes but don't have frank obstruction identified by spirometry. Ultimately, their results demonstrated that 15% of their participants that did not have obstruction could be diagnosed with COPD, and some of those that did have obstruction could be reclassified, especially if they were asymptomatic. And this might highlight looking better at which population we really need to focus on to identify high-risk individuals for having poor disease mortality, exacerbations, and lung function decline, and not overdiagnose patients who don't have these risks but still meet criteria by obstruction. So this is very interesting when you think about whether we need to start looking at new diagnostic approaches. One thing we've gotten a great appreciation for over the last decade is that the future of COPD really is about getting a precise understanding of who actually is at the highest risk for disease. So not just with the diagnostic criteria that I just reviewed, but also trying to understand underlying mechanisms that might give us an understanding of where targeted therapies may need to be focused upon. And additional presentations demonstrated that there were various mechanisms, pathobiologic mechanisms, including immune mechanisms, structural and metabolic pathways that really highlight personalized approaches towards the disease. There are clinically observable phenotypes in COPD, but really understanding the endotypic mechanisms which link to pathobiology can really be harnessed to understand which biomarkers reflect a disproportionate difference in disease morbidity and really identify targets for therapies in these in this landscape. Some of the biomarkers, of course, that we have at our disposal are eosinophils to highlight Th2-driven disease, as well as including the proteomic and metabolomic markers that we've now developed over the last decade or so. At the core of understanding COPD phenotypes and endotypes are, of course, biomarkers, and our quest for looking for novel biomarkers to better classify these patients is still ongoing. For example, in ATS 2025 this year, we talked about a novel biomarker, which might give us a few more insights into those patients who have comorbid pulmonary hypertension. And by way of background, pH in COPD patients impacts a significant number of patients and can contribute significantly to morbidity. What was found was that MIR-126 was actually reduced in COPD lungs and may be influential in vascular remodeling. And so what the study looked at was the link between MIR-126 target proteins and clinical outcomes of COPD pH. They identified that it may play a role in the mechanistic pathways associated with COPD that has a pH phenotype, and that potentially these targets now can be linked in a way that has therapeutic implications. Now that we have a greater appreciation for the intense landscape of different phenotypes and endotypes in COPD, highlighting its high degree of heterogeneity, let's look at some of the promising therapies and the studies that were discussed at ATS that really target distinct subgroups. And really, if you look at the last 20 years, you can see that there's been a significant evolution in COPD therapies that have been introduced. And this is very exciting for a clinician to be able to have these therapies at our disposal. Moving from what we can glean from our understanding of the endotypes and focusing on high-risk populations, a number of efforts have been undertaken within ATS. For example, an ATS workshop on understanding early COPD and trying to understand what targets and factors that need to be considered in such clinical trials is really key. And some of the main domains that were discussed were, number one, a mechanistic target; number two, the correct patient population; number three, having really good endpoints to understand how we can imagine that these therapies will create benefit on the ground; number four, the trial type; and number five, the identification of the participant and really the engagement at the participant level to allow for greater health equity. Some of the targets or some of the treatments that we were able to hear about during ATS 2025 included, of course, dupilumab, which targets the IL-4 and IL-13 pathways of type 2 inflammation. And there's been quite a little bit of buzz about this through the BOREAS and the NOTUS trials. And what was presented this time were the phase 3 trials, which encompassed almost 2,000 patients, and really to show that dupilumab was able to create a 34% reduction in the annual exacerbation rate compared to placebo. And this is very exciting because we've known for a while that dupilumab might be very useful for severe asthma and other manifestations of type 2 inflammation. And the evidence now is really building towards COPD, which really shows that this is one of the first targets for a COPD endotype that might be successfully managed or targeted using this type of precision medicine. More to come, I think, from these results, but definitely really promising for COPD patients in the future. In addition to biologics such as dupilumab, we've also seen new data coming from ensifentrine for moderate to severe COPD. And what was presented was the ENHANCE 1 and 2 phase 3 clinical trials. These were really focused on patients with moderate to severe symptomatic COPD, and they were randomized to the drug versus placebo for a period of 24 weeks. The primary endpoint was looking at lung function at week 12. And really to understand that this is in a way to start moving away from steroidal inhalers, which have really been the mainstay of therapy for so long, but really have been under scrutiny lately for their side effect profile and trying to move away from the steroid-based anti-inflammatory mechanisms. And so having a dual PDE3-4 inhibitor was evaluated here to see if there might be benefit towards COPD. The results that they've presented demonstrated that both in the ENHANCE 1 and 2 phase 3 trials, there was an improved lung function as represented by FEV1 and reduced exacerbation risk. And one of the really interesting thing about things that was presented was to see whether there was benefit in the exacerbations, even in participants who didn't really have a significant FEV1 improvement. And so this also provides some promising targets for symptomatic patients, really those that are quite with high morbidity, moderate to severe symptomatic COPD, to see if this might help with their exacerbations. So the data that was presented with dupilumab, as well as the PDE3-4 inhibitors, actually has implications for GOLD guidelines. And in fact, GOLD 2025 has emphasized a follow-up in incorporating these therapies as suggestions to implement or escalate current management. And not only the implementation of these novel therapies, but also to emphasize that there are non-pharmacologic approaches that need to be escalated in patients who have dyspnea, who already are on standard therapies at this point. So far I've talked about improved diagnostic criteria for COPD to determine who the high-risk patients are. We've covered some novel therapies or existing therapies with novel approaches to patients with moderate to severe disease and high burden of symptoms. And what's next? So I think what is really important to mention here are that there are also concerns about ensuring access for patients to these therapies and to these improved diagnostic methods. And this is across the board a very critical factor because it's not important just to have these approaches, but really to reach the people that really need them. And so a couple of the different ways that this was presented at ATS this year included access issues in COPD care, really improving our understanding and our awareness of the disparities in diagnosis and treatment, especially for vulnerable populations, specifically minoritized populations. And the contributing factors here included both income, education level, as well as gaps in insurance coverage, as well as bias in that essentially culminate in significant disparities across diagnosis and treatment. The cost for these therapies continues to be high, and there are significant barriers financially among these lower income groups. And so additional data was presented to demonstrate this and support the disparities within these populations. In addition to these access issues, it's really important that even if you are able to have inhalers and be not limited by financial constraints, that we understand that patients are using these therapies effectively. An inhaler technique is something that's long well understood in asthma and really is now emerging as equally important in COPD therapies. So there was one study that was presented, an observational one by the COPD Foundation, which encompassed 257 participants looking at the quality of inhaler technique defined as acceptable versus unacceptable, and looking at the outcomes in spirometry right shortly after inhaler use. What was found was that, of course, acceptable technique led to was associated with greater improvement in lung function, and they did identify common errors or barriers in the way that people were using their inhalers. This really emphasizes the importance of working with participants or patients in the clinical setting for emphasizing their a proper inhaler technique to enhance the amount of bronchodilation and really optimize the amount of therapy that they're getting to be able to have measurable effects. And so re-education and counseling in a multidisciplinary way is really an important factor to consider when educating patients about inhaler use and really should be part of the standard management. Where does this leave us in 2025 moving forward? So some of the key takeaways that I've gleaned through the presentations for COPD this year have been number one, how we're redefining how we diagnose COPD, not just based on spirometry alone, but really integrating data from CT images, symptoms, and other risk factors to better identify a high-risk population. We've also seen how biologics like dupilumab can actually be applied now to patients with type 2 inflammation and results from more advanced phase 3 trials that support these relationships. And also seen how ensifentrine might offer a non-steroidal approach towards bronchodilation and the reduction of exacerbations independent of improvement in lung function. We've really emphasized in some of these presentations about how precision and prevention are really the future. A better understanding of endotypes and underlying pathobiologic mechanisms can really afford opportunities for therapeutics, and how this is not just enough to develop new therapies, but we really need to ensure that it's reaching the population, both in terms of health access and financial barriers, as well as from improving at the patient level to better deliver medications and non-pharmacologic therapies, and this being integrated into the new guidelines. So, thank you again for joining us for this clinical clip entitled Key COPD Updates from ATS 2025. Please look at our landing page for this activity to claim any of your AMA, ANCC, ACPE credit, as well as to access the downloadable slides that accompanied my clips today. Thank you so much.